This is the Finance Committee meeting, regular meeting of September 6th, 2022. We will start the meeting with item one, a call to order, and item two, consider a finding that as a result of the COVID-19 emergency, meeting in person would present imminent risk to the health or safety of attendees. And the meeting is authorized to be held by teleconference pursuant to Government Code 54953. Marty, you concur?
I do.
Okay. Next item is three, comments from the public.
I have hands raised.
Okay. No. Let's go ahead and move on to item four, finance monthly updates. Is that Paula?
Or, yes, it is. Thank you, John. Good morning, everyone. Really quickly, the first top three items we'll be discussing a little bit more in depth later on in the committee meeting. So just to go over really quickly, we have the majority of documents work papers to Richardson and Company CPAs to initiate the discussions for the draft audit. We are actively engaging in conversations with the auditor to ensure that we're getting them the information that they need and making any corrections as these documents have been submitted. Tyler Technologies, obviously, once we've stabilized our accounting processes, we'll start working with Tyler to get program and project managers on board and start getting that development and implementation. Obviously, we need to have the accounting services firm assist us with getting our financial house in order before we even start the discussions as far as the implementation. Again, financial consulting, we'll be talking about this a little bit later. The district has entered into a contract with the Kuhn Group. They were on site the week of August 29th, and they completed some initial analysis and assessments and have provided us with a timeline of tasks for completion, in addition to the scope of work, which Tom will be going over later on. Utility billing. So we're continuing to audit the residential accounts within Utility Star. Through the audit process, we determined that several errors had occurred during the move-in, move-out process. Ultimately, what occurred was when a resident moves out of their home and a new buyer comes in, the staff were trained to copy the previous information and carry it over into the new information and for the new resident. And what ended up happening is over time, because we've had such high turnover, in the translation of the training, that the manual entry of certain revenue codes created a lock on that dollar amount. And so some residents have been paying the same rates several years. And so we've been going through and auditing these accounts. And as it stands right now, the district has lost approximately $10,000 in revenue for trash, sewer, and security. We'll be reviewing these with the attorney to determine what the length of time to go back to collect or to refund if there were any additional charges that were inaccurate to the good of the resident. Once we have that information and have made that determination with the attorney, then we're going to bring forward an updated policy for the Finance Committee to review. That way we can have a consistent policy set across the board moving forward if this were to happen in the future. And once we receive the board recommendation, then we'll start sending out letters to the impacted residents, letting them know the status of the audit and how it's impacted them. That's it for me. Does anyone have any questions?
Marty, anything?
No, I might after you get into the nuts and bolts of all this.
Yeah, me too. At the moment, I'm okay. All right. So is that where we leave it at this point, Paula, until we get into the as Marty calls it, nuts and bolts?
Yes.
Okay. So, Amelia, any hands, questions? Hello.
Amelia, are you on mute? I see John Sullivan's hand is up, and Amelia, you are on mute. Amelia, you're still on mute. Well, John, can you talk? I'll go ahead.
Certainly I'm able to talk, Tom.
All right.
Yes.
I'll start a timer for you.
So I'm sorry I missed the comments from the public. I got hung up on the wrong Zoom meeting. I wanted to ask two questions. One is the budget that was approved at the last meeting isn't on the district's website yet, nor are the schedules for CIP or reserves or otherwise. Is there a reason why they're not on the website yet?
I think at this point it's actually just an oversight right now. Our staffing still is not up to speed, but we will definitely post those things. I think they're ready to post.
So my second question is, I don't know, you guys have been so busy on other projects that you need to look at the return on the two-year treasuries, which today broke 3.5%. So you have, I would say, $5 million right now in reserves and set aside for developer required improvements that is earning around 1%. Am I close there?
Traditionally, John, this is John Merchant. Traditionally, yeah, you would be accurate. I haven't looked at it.
So certainly the 500 or the 585,000 that the district is holding for phase two of the water plan, I would request that timing wise, at least that and anything else that you're considering getting a higher yield on, that you would be safe taking that project money plus the interest that's earned through today and buying a two-year treasury note. I believe you would get more than 3.5%. Just to give you an idea, on $5 million, that's the difference between 100 grand for the district and 350 grand over a two-year period. So I'm just bringing this up because you may not have been paying attention to it, but those really short rates have moved up even past the 10 and the 20-year rate, and now's the time to lock in some return for that money that you're not going to use over the next 18 to 20 months. Just letting you know. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, John. I agree with that. And, you know, we traditionally used to have an annual meeting to review the investment portfolio, Tom. Maybe you should take a look at that and see where we are. And it probably is timely to get into that. It will be helpful to know exactly where we are through the reserve process in the short term as well, to make sure that, you know, what we're allocating out into a shorter term or medium term rate does not conflict with the need for the money. But it's worth thinking about doing. Time is right to do that.
Well, and Paula has the investment policy, reserve policy on the agenda for later this month.
Okay. Anything else out there, Amelia?
No more hands raised.
All righty. So go back up to the agenda. I'm on my iPad, so I've only got one place to look here. Utility bill updates we just did. Item five, adoption of an ordinance to establish rules and regulation for organic waste disposal.
Yeah, I've got this one. Paul and I are working together with our attorney and with Cal Waste on a number of issues related to the franchise agreement. That aside, in order to meet our requirements under, and Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, please, in order to meet our requirements under SB 1383, which is the organics mandate placed on the state that becomes effective January 1 as a mandate, a lot of agencies have already been addressing organics over the years, and some of them over the last couple of years have implemented their program. So we're going to be part of the group that goes in at the last date possible. And that was by design, because they also wanted to talk about our franchise agreement as well. But this ordinance changes the district's policy, and it's a bunch of pages. Amelia, are you there?
Amelia actually had to step out and handle something really quickly, so I'm hosting.
Okay, so can you pull up?
Yeah.
Okay, so basically it's a rewrite, a pretty big rewrite of our ordinance. And what you see here is, do we have the red line version and the final version here, Amelia or Paula?
And here's the red line version. Andrew Ramos, our attorney, helped us with this. So it's changed. It's changed a lot. And there'll be an ordinance that'll come out. We're waiting on Andrew to finish writing it. But we would like to hear this at the board meeting September 21st. So we'll have the ordinance by then.
So are we going to, Tom, are we going to, are we going to take this red line a step further into a more final document that we could actually go through and evaluate on its own? I read this. I'm just wondering, are we negotiating our way through this still, and will there be more changes, or where are we?
Well, go ahead, Amanda.
I've added the clean version of this too.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that.
It comes with the ordinance. This is a pretty close to final draft.
Yeah, and we're just waiting. You know, Andrew was busy, really busy last week, working with us and working with the other companies. But what we're trying to show the Finance Committee today is that we're ready to bring this ordinance forward to the board meeting on the 21st. And that satisfies our obligation for our state reporting. We turn this into the county or the state, or county, I believe, CalRecycle. And then we're prepared to go forward with our reporting requirements. And then the franchise agreement, which we're currently evaluating with Cal Waste and our attorney, is another item that we'll probably bring to the board, I would guess, probably by October. It's a pretty big rewrite of our franchise agreement. So I need some time to be able to make sure we have all the legalese taken care of. And then we can give a nice presentation to the Finance Committee in October on the 4th.
So in terms of final rates, where are we in relation to adding this to the agreement?
The rates that you see in this agreement are the rates that were approved at the August 17th board meeting, which are the same rates that were approved for fiscal year 21-22.
Okay.
So those are the rates you see here in this ordinance. And when we change the rates, then we bring this ordinance back in and we change it again on the ordinance.
Here's what I'd like to do at the point before we get really final with this thing. Is I'd like to take these final rates, and I don't want to read anything into this or anybody to read anything into this, but I want to compare them to the county rates. And I would probably, if it's not a terrible problem, to get a bottom line rate quote without all the jumble of the contract and everything, find out where another independent contractor is in terms of rates. I'm not interested particularly in doing business with somebody else, but I'm also interested in seeing at the end of this process how the rates that we're going to pay going forward compare to the other rates that are available. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Can I ask a question about this ordinance? Is this something that started with something Cal Waste gave us? Is that how it started? Or is it started with our old one?
So this is actually our existing ordinance that we modified to meet the requirements of SB 1383,
okay,
which is the organics waste requirement through Cal Waste. So we've been working with other agencies, and Cal Waste actually reached out to one of their other agencies they work with and provided us with a lot of the language. And so we've been working with Andrew Ramos to get the language cleaned up, modify it so that it fits our agency, and updates our existing solid waste ordinance.
It looks like you changed the names of some of these carts, and I thought it was terribly confusing. Sometimes they're called gray, green, and blue. Sometimes they're called other things. I thought it was confusing.
Yeah, we can certainly look into those and eliminate any of those inconsistencies. You know, obviously, we're still working with Andrew on this to make sure that the language is accurate and meets all of the requirements of SB 1383. But yeah, we'll go take another go around and make sure that all of those inconsistencies are cleaned up.
Could you go to section 909?
I can. And then I want to just keep in mind that this is not the ordinance. This is the chapter 31, the solid waste code.
Okay.
So these must be the definitions, 905. And they had to incorporate.
Right there, Scott. Yeah. I found this section on inspections kind of onerous. That yeah. We're giving people the right to come in our backyards. I don't know how you get that right. Or anybody gets that right. Could you?
There used to be back in the years when we negotiated this, which I think was first in 2005. There used to be some entity we had that was can police that actually they weren't going in your backyard, but when you put the can out early in the morning, there were people that were going through the recycle can back when that was the fashionable item. Now it's organic waste, and detailing what was in there and coming up with a proportional relation as to, you know, what was correct and what was not correct. It's been done in some form before. I'm not saying it's a great idea, but we've been there before with this.
Right. Also, something to consider, Martin, is that this is a requirement of us administering the solid waste program.
That's what I want you to check, because the ability for an inspector to come in my backyard is terribly onerous.
No, they certainly wouldn't go into your backyard. I mean, the last sentence of the first paragraph says it does not allow the district to enter the interior of a private residential property for inspection. Ultimately, okay. What John Merchant stated was what would happen is that once the cart is put out on the street, if the waste hauler comes in and sees that the resident is not meeting that requirement for the organics waste, then there would be a report made to us. Or
I don't have any problem with that. It's when it's on the street. Then you ought to define better what the interior of a private residential property is. Is that inside my dwelling or is that inside my backyard?
Well, it says it doesn't allow the district to enter the interior. So the assumption would be, but we could certainly have Andrew clean that language up to make it a little bit more clear.
So you're intended to mean you can't go inside my fence or inside my door.
That's correct. That's what that states.
Then I'd make it more clear.
Yeah. And like Marty said, and like we've done in the past, maybe it's a matter, if it's allowed, you know, if the law allows us to do it this way, to simply say that it has to be performed when the carts are on the street.
That's great. Go for it. Yeah.
I don't know that there would be any objection to that. And the only thing, who knows what the law says, but if it's within the law, then to define it that way is probably the best way to do it. You know, the other thing, can you go, Paula, go back up to the rates with the 96 gallon can, or the, you know, up to the regular rate section? There we go. Here's a question I have in light of all of the stuff we've been through with rates. And the number now escapes me, but I remember it being significant with the number of people that use a 96-gallon cart. And there are folks in my neighborhood, you know, with small kids, that means lots of diapers and all that other kinds of stuff, that get along quite well with a 64-gallon cart. Is there any reason to believe there are a bunch of people that have a 96-gallon cart that probably don't need it and probably don't even know that there's a difference?
Actually, I really wouldn't have an answer on that. You know, ultimately,
the only thing, and again, the number escapes me, but I have seen it recently. And my first reaction was, wow, that's a lot of people with a great big can. And I'm not talking about commercial entities. I'm talking about residential entities. I mean, they were going nuts over our rate increase, and virtually the equivalent of our rate increase is the difference between a 64 and a 96-gallon cart. So maybe there's some education we do there for people, number one, to understand what the rates are going to be here, and number two, to do some kind of a description as to what generally is an average usage for a family of four, or a family of four with small children or whatever. Because I just think there's probably a lot of people out there that are just spending money unnecessarily and then blaming that, of course, on us. So
sure, I'm sure that Cal Waste has some sort of materials that we can get from them.
Yeah. And the other part of that that I would want perhaps some consideration for going forward is, for example, I have two gray carts because I have a lot of landscaping and a lot of garden, and I generally use both of them on a two-week basis. And at certain times of the year, I am gathering carts far and wide across the neighborhood to just get everything out of my yard. But in this new system, we're going to be picking up gray carts on a weekly basis versus on a biweekly basis. And I'm wondering if there's a savings attached to that. And if it is it being passed through to us?
Well, John, in the new format, they're picking up two carts every week instead of one week and two the other, because they have to pick up the green waste every week.
Right.
And also, and I don't like this at all, but it appears that everybody who has a residence is supposed to have a green can for, you know, yard waste and organic waste. And it appears to be a requirement.
Yeah, it does. And I think where we ran into trouble with that years ago was the fact that, like, down along the lake in the townhomes and whatnot, there were a lot of places where there was not room for two cans, if I remember right. I think there was something going on there, and I don't know what resulted from it, but I vaguely remember something happening.
Well, it appears to be that there's not an option to opt out of your green can anymore, but I'm trying to dig into that as much as I can, but the state law is what it is.
I'm not sitting here saying we ought to violate the law, but I am sitting here saying that, you know, maybe we ought to look at the rate chart and see if there are conditions where people are paying a certain fixed fee a month now could reduce that. Or if in fact, because we're picking up cans in different orders and sizes that we may have in the past, if there's a way to reduce the bill. The other thing that comes to mind is with green waste, you know, I don't know if there is a smaller can, but picking it up on a weekly basis for a lot of people, especially the ones whose gardeners take stuff away with them, you know, there may be an opportunity to reduce the size of the can. You know, I'm just looking for ways to, you know, to knock down the bill. You know,
well, I agree, and I've asked about the 38-gallon can for the green waste, and the answer I've received so far is there's only a 64 and a 96-gallon can.
Okay.
So I don't like it because people who don't have a green can today are going to be required to get one. And, you know, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but a lot of times state laws don't make a lot of sense when it comes down to practical reality.
Okay. So as we move towards the finality of this agreement, maybe that we can answer some of these questions. And particularly I would, before we actually pull the trigger on something, you know, kind of like to see the county as a benchmark and maybe one other provider just to make sure that we're in the ballpark.
Okay. We will do that.
Any questions or comments or hands or anything, Amelia?
Nope, no hands up.
All right, take us back up to the top again, if you would.
Gladly. The next thing is, the next thing is the Poon Group.
Okay. Go ahead, Tom.
John and Marty, I apologize. This letter is just, we just finished up this memo a little bit earlier today. So you haven't seen it yet, but if you have time after the meeting, take time to read through it. But basically, given our financial situation, given our lack of having our audit prepared, having our budget reports on time, having all sorts of fiscal issues, I was given direction from the board to seek out a company to help us with exactly what we tried to hire Ide Bailey to do, which is help clean up our financial situation. And so I'm entering into an agreement with the Poon Group on a time and materials basis for them to come in and do what they need to do to get our accounting house in order. Their primary objective is four items. And the first item, and Amelia, you go down to the bottom of page two where there's a little chart. Thank you. Basically, the task order, and we're using a task order methodology for how we're going to pay the Poon Group, and we've got activities up through the end of the calendar year, which puts us in a better spot if we get there. But the number one task order is to provide services for the audit readiness for the Richardson Company to do our 21 audit. There's something known as a provided by client list called PBC. And every time somebody gets audited, they basically get a long list of documents to provide from their auditor. And then the auditor goes through them and makes their opinion. So this is an external audit firm that the district hired to keep our books, to keep our transparency up and to confirm that we're doing the right thing. And when we aren't doing things right, they need to tell us, and they do. And then we have to take action to implement those changes. So their task order number one will be to help us finish the audit. Susan and Paula and their team have done quite a bit of work, but the Poon Group is going to go over the whole thing just to make sure that we don't lose any more time and that we can check this off and await the report. The next thing to do is to help us to produce the budget to actual reports for the current fiscal year. So hopefully in September, definitely by October, we should be able to come to the finance committee and the board in September, the finance committee in October, with the July and the August budget to actual reports that reflect the budget that was approved on August 17th and includes all the transactions and validated transactions for all of our payroll and our expenses and such as that, because that requires entry and requires a pretty good scrutinizing of how all of our expenditures, especially how payroll is dispersed and stuff. So that's task order number two. And task order number three, assuming that task order number one has been blessed and on its way, task order number three is to provide accounting services and audit readiness for fiscal year 21-22. And that's a fiscal year that just ended in July. And as everyone knows, we are well behind on our financial reporting for last fiscal year. Heavy turnover has created large gaps in data entry. And those are the things that we're going to have the Poon Group help us get caught up on. And then last but not least, in task order, looks like it says task order number three, but it's really task order number four. That's a typo on my part. Will be to run through and produce actual budget to actual reports for fiscal year 21-22 that just ended on June 30th. And that, my goal is to take this lack of this perceived being untransparent off the discussion table and to put the reality of where we're at with our finances and how we manage our funds and how we track our budget. So that's what we're doing. That's direction I received from the board. It was very clear. And I'm hoping that this starts to meet the needs and we can put this question about the 21 audit behind us as soon as possible. Are there any questions, Marty or John?
Yeah, this task order one, how does that relate to the previous person that was doing this?
Well, the previous person, Ide Bailey, you mean the first?
No.
You brought
I thought you had some guy from a retired annuitant or something doing this.
Well, we hired Susan Wren, who's a retired annuitant, and she has been working with all of the provided by client lists and documents to get them delivered to Richardson and Company. And the Poon Group is going to go through that list, and I'll provide Susan with any support or any questions she needs answered, or maybe provide her with stuff she hasn't seen before, because she hasn't seen how the district runs their books all the time.
So you're going to have two people working on it?
Well, between Paula and Susan Wren, and I think the 21 audit services, audit readiness is being completed, and then the Poon Group is going to go in there and review and support whatever needs to be done to get it done as quickly as possible.
Okay.
So encapsulate for me, if you could, Tom, what are the things that are going to be on that list after they do it? I mean, I know we have been in eight different directions in terms of, we had the one annuitant working on bank reconciliation.
Yeah.
We had another person working on developer billing. We had another person that now is assembling all this stuff that we're getting ready to deliver to the auditor. There's all kinds of pieces of this. I just don't get what they all are and where they're going.
So Amelia, can you scroll down to deliverables? Okay, and maybe this helps answer it. These are the four tasks. The first one is the first bullet. And basically they're going to help go through what we've already provided and validate whether they look right. If we'll try to get our audit preparedness as much as possible, so our auditor can get busy doing their work. And then the next two bullets are kind of switched, but the task order number two is that fiscal year 23 budget to actual. And then the number three is the audit readiness for the 22 fiscal year, and then the one that just ended, and then the budget to actuals for the last fiscal year. And then—
So go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, and then afterwards, if we're in good shape, if we feel comfortable after all this work, we'll keep the Poon Group on to put us in a position for going forward that we aren't so out of whack and falling behind all the time with our work. The other part is eventually this turns into getting everything ready for the Tyler project to start taking shape with having our financials in order and our accounts cleaned up.
That was my, that was kind of where I was going, was how does this relate? So all of this work that we're going through in these four areas, is that work at being dumped into Great Plains or reconciled in Great Plains? Is that where we are?
Yeah, I think this is going to get us where we want to go, John.
Let me make sure I understand it. That means that essentially at the end of this process, you're going to bless the accuracy of Great Plains and then turn and take that and implement it into the new system. Is that the plan?
That is correct. Vanessa Burke is on the line if you're interested in having her take on answering that question, or I could ask Paula. What's your pleasure?
I would, well, here's if Vanessa is there, you know, for all to hear, can she give me like a 3-minute assessment of, we're here now, here's what we've seen to this point, this is how we're gonna fix it, and rough estimate, this is how long it's gonna take us?
It looks like she can do so. She's unmuted.
Yeah, I'm unmuted. Good afternoon, everybody on the board chair. And, you know, I know Paula's been there for a while now, and I have only been on site basically last week and kind of getting our arms around everything. But I've been in conversation with Ide Bailey and the auditors and your team. The scope of work and the breadth of work that is there, including a system implementation, is broad. So what we did in our proposal, which most of the stuff in the staff report, I think the proposal is attached or will be, is directly from that proposal. And my initial assessment is that there is a lot on the to-do list for finance to get ready for a system implementation. And that is probably, you know, my personal opinion is until you can get it right manually before, or even if you're in your existing system, get your processes and your people settled down in that system working correctly, you aren't ready to necessarily start implementing. You would just confuse the process more doing that. So we're looking at kind of these four different sections as follows. We're looking at 21, which a ton of work has been done by Paula and the hired annuitant, Susan Wren, to get ready. And in conversation with the audit firm, we have extensive audit experience in government, state and local government, to have that second set of eyes on your schedules that you've submitted to them. And there's a wealth of schedules. I mean, any one audit could be 100 to 500 items that are requested. So we're not looking at everything, but we're looking at the high level saying, is the documentation there to support that account balance? And is it ready for audit? That's why we call it audit readiness. That's for 21. For 22, the accounting services and audit readiness, you're not ready for the audit for 22. And we just ended that fiscal year, so that's not abnormal. You need to be in the process of closing the books and getting it ready for the audit. And this is kind of the prime time. You're about a year behind on 21. Right now is prime time for audit season for our 22 fiscal year end audits. And you're not there yet. You have many accounts that have not been closed. And so we're doing two things in that stand, in that part of the scope, is one, looking at where you're at in 22. You've had substantial turnover in the department. This is not unusual in the industry, and the resources are very limited in the industry to be able to find people that have both governmental accounting, auditing, and budgeting. So you're facing what a lot of governmental agencies are facing due to COVID and the Great Recession, great resignation time, People are leaving jobs. They don't want to work in the office. They're wanting remote work. Some are wanting in the office. So it just, you know, people are in transition in their careers. And I think you're kind of a recipient of that in the finance department. So you've got two vacancies currently, which is the accounting manager and the accountant. And so in terms of 22, a lot of that kind of got stopped or dropped because there's just too much to do with two vacancies. So we're agreeing to hold those vacancies open for those two positions to help us get in and kind of ramp up and do what I would call kind of a SWOT team analysis of FY22. We come in, we look at it, we're going to do a very high level, make sure we get you ready for audit. And that audit would probably happen sometime after December. Because the auditors also are in their busy season and have a lot of government clients as well. Now, the 23 budget versus actual June and July, if we think about the current month, prior 2 months, and we could probably include August in there because now it's, you know, post Labor Day, is you've already got an adopted 23 budget and actual data. And if existing staff can keep up with the current transactions, and this is the way I like to do it, is current staff keeps up with current transactions and the current counting. We do the look back approach so that, you know, you've got Jesse, the retired annuitant Jesse is on staff doing bank reconciliations. You've got a Robert Half person there and you've got a payroll person there that are all temporary staff right now, as well as Susan Wren. So you've got about four temporary personnel kind of keeping your day-to-day operations going. However, they're not all full-time. So, you know, one works 2 days, I think the other two are full-time and one is not. So you don't have dedicated full-time staff. Some of them have other projects. But their goal is to keep that 22-23 financial information up to date so that I can report out a budget versus actual in a template that is acceptable to the board. And I think we've done that in the past. We've had a template that, so I worked on your 19 cleanup process. And I know we came up with something that was acceptable to the board. And so I'll be meeting with each of you to make sure that's still what you're interested in seeing and getting that delivered. And I think the goal would be to get those two delivered by next month, at least by your next meeting in October. Budget versus actual for 22, we cannot do that for all funds until the 22 cleanup happens. But that would be first and foremost to happen right at the end. It will be part of the cleanup effort. We have to look at what the budget was that was adopted and where your actual is falling. We are setting that up right now. We know we won't be ready for that until we've done the underlying accounting and looked at it. But that really kind of ties that together. And until all that's done, I would never recommend you go forward and implement a system. You need to get your opening balances set up so that you can trust the data that's there. Otherwise you have a transition process that could be, you hear about system implementation projects, about 50% of them fail. So you wanna be ready for that system implementation. And that's why we did this contract as monthly. We basically said, let's see how far we can get with everything that's going on. It's gonna be dependent on cooperation from your finance staff and all your personnel in the organization, because it really touches on everybody. And so moving forward, that would be part of a separate task order that we could be narrowed in on. Right now, it's a time and materials contract. I know you got several proposals this time around, and I think we just had more of the expertise with the district because we've been there before. We've done this once before. So I think we'll be able to hit the ground running and we'll probably get through it quite a bit faster than somebody that's brand new because we know your operations. I don't know if that's helpful.
Yeah, it's very helpful. Marty, you got questions?
Yeah, I'm confused of what's going to happen after you got all these things taken care of by December. How are we going to operate in tandem with starting the Tyler system, or what's going to happen?
I think by December, we would evaluate Tyler. I wouldn't recommend, I would always recommend implementing at the beginning of a fiscal year versus during. And again, you need to look at the by module, how you're going to do that. And I have not yet looked at your project charter for that and talked with Tyler, but that would be something we would need to think through with district staff.
If we were, Vanessa, if we were to take that that guidance and begin a formal conversion to the new system in conjunction with the new fiscal year, is there anything we can do up front in front of that new fiscal year that would allow us to run parallel to see how we're doing?
What I think, so you know, I was there in 19, and the district's been going through a transition for a period of time now. One of the things that I talked with Paula about, and I think she's in agreement with, is that with Tyler, and one of the things that they do is, you know, it all comes down to people, process, and systems. So you've got three underlying systems. You've got the Tyler system, and you've got Great Plains, and we've got to get them all kind of converted and get it all onto this ERP platform, which is the Tyler Encode system. And really, before you do that, and where I think, you know, I think about my project in 19, and that, you know, we got through that project, we got you cleaned up, we had a clean audit for 2 years in a row, and now we're right kind of back where, back really where we started before. And so what's happening in that intervening process, you know, I my goal is to come in, clean places up, leave them in good shape so that they don't go backwards, right? So, you know, what is sort of missing? What's like that missing element? And one of the things that Tyler will do as part of their project implementation is a current state and a future state analysis. And that needs to happen. So where you're documenting what your current people, systems, and processes are, and then figuring out what the future state is. Now that could be happening today as we're working on the cleanup efforts. We can work on that current and future state study so that we're ready for that conversion process, and you've redesigned your policies and procedures accordingly to mirror to the new system. The worst thing you could do is put garbage from the old system into the new system. So we want to clean up the accounting records, get the fiscal house in order so that, and that's a decision point, right? How much are you going to convert over? Are you converting all your customer utility accounts? Are you converting over all of your accounts payable? Are you converting all of your capital assets? What data needs to feed into that system? And each one of those are decision points. So it's a heavy lift to get that done. You're not near ready for that yet. I can just tell you that right now based on my past experience. Because right now we're just trying to get our arms around those underlying records and making sure that that is complete before we can say, okay, now we know what is complete in the old system. Let's figure out what we're converting over to the new system, right? Because you can lose history. You might need to keep a small license going on the old system for a while until that data is purged. And then once you go live, it's when you hit that button to go live, that's when you're going to operate in a parallel environment. So you're going to go live, and you've got to work in a sandbox before you even, and Tom could probably talk about this more than me because he's heavier into IT than I am, but you need to operate your implementation in a sandbox and test and test and test to ensure that the data got in there correctly. Test and validate.
And Vanessa, would you mind talking a little bit about how, when we go to the Tyler system, we might change how we fundamentally manage our different funds?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, part of the complexity that I see with the district is, you know, you're not a huge district. You're a good sized district with a number of houses and some expansion capabilities in the future. And really, you know, once you reach full build out for the community, that's kind of your endpoint, right, for your system. And is that going to take you 5, 10, 15 years, 20 years, who knows, with the economy the way it's going. So you really kind of have to anticipate that. And one of the things that I talked to Tom about was simplifying your fund structure so that possibly what you do is you have cost centers for each of your service operations. And that those cost centers are utilized in a new account code structure that would support the district and then have an overall kind of combined district, because you really are providing multiple different service lines to one set of basically one set of constituents. So, and your community is really refined. So you're not like a city that's providing services in outlying areas to the unincorporated county, and it gets very complicated, and buying and selling water from different agencies, you know, all of that gets very complicated when you're dealing with a larger district. So we may be able to, I know it was very overly complicated when I came in 19, and we fixed up some of the, you know, our recommendation was to look at the cost allocations and ensure that was appropriate. And I think the district ended up hiring somebody to come in and do the cost study. And that made some changes in the organization, but a further refinement of that is probably necessary now that people are understanding the data better. And once we become more transparent, and, you know, I would never convert a system until the board's been seeing regular financial statements, at least monthly or at least quarterly at a minimum. So when we can start giving you budget versus actual quarterly and you're satisfied with what you see, that's when I would say, that's when you're ready to start pulling the pen to start the system implementation project.
Do we have, Tom and Vanessa, do we have on the other side of that as it relates to balances and whether or not they're reconciled? I'm concerned at the moment of understanding with what we have parked in each individual reserve account. Do you have confidence that those are or are not accurate?
They need to be reviewed. They need to go backwards and review what the board requested to have happen. Because I think, John, you're referring to over the last few years until this last fiscal year, the board was committing certain levels of property taxes to drainage and security reserves. Is that what you're talking about?
Right. And I'm just concerned, you know, at the very top level to start with, that, you know, in each of those reserve accounts, that the money we're showing in there, whether it be for water, sewer, drainage, interfund, when we barred for the water plant, all of those numbers are accurate. I mean, are we at a point where we would say, yeah, we have reasonable idea that that's true, or, well, we don't have the faintest idea? I mean, I'm somewhere in between there is the answer, I guess. That's just what I'm trying to understand.
Well, again, that involves going through our prior year's transactions and validating them over the time. I mean, the revolving door we've had here of people making financial transactions is just devastating to our accuracy, which is why we continue to have the same problem all over again. So hopefully the PUM group is going to be able to fix this up, and hopefully they can come out with some recommendations that go into the future.
Yeah, we can look at the accounting. I mean, on the reserves, I mean, you've been collecting reserves for a number of years, and I know, you know, there are ins and outs to that reserve, and there's been some overly complex entries that have gone through there. I can't comment on it today as to whether it was accurate. I can tell you that whatever the balances were at 19 when we did the cleanup work in 19, that the auditor blessed it and said that it was accurate within a material amount, right? They have a level of materiality for you. And so if the auditor isn't going to bless it, if they don't, we would hope that they wouldn't bless it. And then in 2020, I believe there were some recommendations on the reserves, but they still came up with an unmodified opinion and did not qualify, saying that there were errors so substantial that they couldn't get their arms around it. So at some point, you have to rely on the audit, right? You have to say the auditor has audited it and is comfortable within a material amount that those amounts are correct. Now, could there be $100 here and there possibly, and that's some of the internal cleanup, because internally you don't really have that same level of materiality, right? Everything needs to be accurate. Right. So we will look at those reserves. I know you had a reserve study done, and so I think we can rely on some of that work that's been done as well. But again, if there are specific issues related to reserves that that we need to be aware of during the recon process, I'll work with Paula on that. And maybe Paula has some concerns that that hasn't bubbled up in my conversations to date. I know there is work being done in various areas. That is one of them. But I think that the last conversation with Ingrid was that she had received that for this year, for 21, not for 22, but for 21.
Okay. I mean, my main concern is, yeah, we have a reserve study, but I'm more concerned in gaining some confidence in the existing balances and then taking a hard look. I'm forgetting about the long-term impact. I just want to know how we get through the next 5 years. I'll start there.
And I do think that as a district, you should be setting your rates at a 5-year kind of clip as well, so that you're not running into surprises, right? And then that way you got to get the underlying cost accounting corrected so that you can ensure that your rates are supported, and that when you go through your 218 hearing, that you have that that strength going forward.
Right.
Right. Yeah, okay. And I mean, it's kind of, you're in an interesting place because you do have a 218 hearing. And if the cost of providing services is going up, which we all know it is because we're in a period of 9.8% inflation, and your citizens are unwilling to allow you to improve the rate, then something's got to go, right? I mean, that's how you balance the books, is
right.
Something has to be given up. And the question is, you know, you should have town hall meetings. So you say, well, if you're not going to, you know, if rates aren't going to go up, what's going to go? What service level needs to change? Because you're in the operation of providing services.
Right.
In the story. Yeah.
Okay. That's a great answer. That's the best answer I've had in a long time. Thanks. Yep. Okay. Okay. Tom, where are we here?
Well, I believe I'm publishing this letter. And so people can read it and know that this is what we're doing. And I believe Mr. Sullivan has a question.
Okay, sure. Go ahead. John?
So this section 6 here, is it going to be appended into the board packet that's online, or is it going to be separately shown on the website as this addendum to the agenda that was there as of this morning?
The answer to your question is yes and yes. When we turn things in late, like we did in this case, we will post it as a separate item on the webpage for the committee, and then Amelia will also put it into the packet. So there's a clean document that has everything in it at the same time.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Marty?
No, let's go on to the next one.
Okay. Yeah, I guess so. Okay. Internal controls policy, is that where we are, Amelia?
Paula's going to talk about this.
Okay.
Yes, so this is just basically a brief introduction of some of the things that we're going to be bringing to the Finance Committee over the next couple of months. Ultimately, one of the things that we need to evaluate and modify significantly are internal controls policy. Right now we have 4. They are for invoices, manual checks, petty cash, which we no longer have. We have internal controls for time cards, and it's really just a review and approval, and the employee spending authority, which is in conjunction with the district's purchase policy and code. So one of the things that to start this conversation is that while we're going to be working with the accounting services firm, we're going to need to also start looking at our internal policies. And Vanessa touched on this quite a bit, talking about current state and future state and getting us prepared for the Tyler implementation. And one of the things that we just need to get on the finance committee's radar is some of these internal controls policy that the district has that are outdated, the ones that we don't have, and start defining them so that when we move forward into a new system, if we were to ever run into the quote great resignation again 10 years down the road, we would have these internal controls set in place, and it would be easier to transition from one staff person to the next, and along with all of our desk manuals and the like that goes with the new system. So just to kind of put this on the radar is really just getting this conversation out there and getting the board ready to start seeing some of these new policies coming forward.
Vanessa or Paula or both, when you consider the selection that we made for the new accounting system, are we comfortable that we're now going to be over the hurdle of finding someone who would be familiar with this particular system versus the other two people on the planet who know something about Great Plains? Are we going to be in a position where we would be able to hand a new employee a manual and say, this is how it works?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of special districts use Tyler Encode. There have been probably within the last year, there's 7 special districts that I'm aware of that have implemented the exact same Tyler Encode. Tyler Munis is another one for municipalities. All of these Tyler Technologies products are all virtually the same. They look a little bit different, but they function the same. And they have a lot of similar facing websites and modules. And so the functionality within those is very similar. Some the Tyler Encode is to a lesser degree. You know, obviously the municipal agencies that use them have a more robust version with a Munis version, but Encode is specifically, it was specifically designed for the smaller agencies, the smaller counties, the special districts and the like, but absolutely. And Tyler is very, they have become very good at what they do with their implementations. I did a lot of work on it. I've done 3 Tyler implementations myself, so I'm very familiar with the system. And then also with these, when we did the reference checks, I spent a lot of time talking to the agencies that were in varying stages of their implementation with Tyler, and all of them had very good things to say. They have a great project management team. They're very good at getting the current and future state going ahead of time so that the agencies know what they're getting into. They do a lot of testing. There's a lot of UA user testing that goes on, beta testing before they actually go live. And they make sure that the agencies get set and ready to go so that they're not running into major issues with things not working, modules not connecting right, or that the data just didn't come through the way that the agency had intended to. So I do feel very comfortable with that, with this particular software. And I think it's going to benefit the district in the long run, regardless of the staffing. You know, we'll have those tools and resources. They also have Tyler University, which literally has videos and step-by-step and a community and tons of resources available to anyone who just wants to learn how a specific module works. We actually have access to that now. All of our staff have access to that, so they can start looking at the process internally and see how these things actually work before we even get to that point. So yes, I have a lot of confidence in this particular platform.
Okay, my final question as it relates to the modules and their implementation centers around our ability to invoice our customers correctly is there, you know, and I've asked for before for someone to look at, you know, our ability to attack this problem first, because I don't think there is anything, well, I can't say that anymore, that you know, we look pretty stupid when we keep amending our billing process and chasing people going backwards to pay bills that we didn't correctly bill them for. And I just really think it would go a long way if we could just focus on straightening that out.
No, absolutely agree, John. And that's one of the reasons why we're auditing these accounts now, is that so we get the system data right. You know, again, Vanessa talked about this quite a bit. And ultimately, unfortunately, we are correcting some things that have been incorrectly entered into Utility Star. A lot of that has to do with training. A lot of that has to do with the learning process. And a lot of it has to do with the high turnover that we've experienced over the last few years. But moving forward, we want to get the system in place perfect, so to speak, before we start billing our customers. And so there will be that that parallel billing process that we'll do internally, just to make sure that we are moving forward with everything correctly into the new system.
Okay. Anything else on this item? Marty, anything?
No.
Any hands, Amelia? What's that?
Don Sullivan, if you're ready for comments.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I think it's very, very important that there be, right below internal control policy, that there is a monthly closing procedure that is published, so that there is no question about all the things that have to be done before you turn out your set of financials. I recommended about 5 months ago that you cut off your water billing on the last day of the month or the first day of the month. And then that's the only calculation that you have for 2,500 of your customers as far as how much they're going to get billed a month. And that gives you all the way till the 25th of that particular next month coming up to put their water usage on their bill, rather than trying to jam it all in between the 25th and the 1st and get everything stuffed. The mistakes are made right during that 5-day process. Now, the mistakes of double billing and other things that you theoretically are working on, that's another matter. But if you're trying to get everything perfect with the 2,500 primary customers you have, you need a closing procedure that actually closes the books and somebody can say, this is done and now we're ready to close. And the hardest part you have is you're trying to match up a usage as of the 25th with a bill that is either looking forward or looking back. And that, I think, is causing you a lot of grief during this time when you don't have enough staff.
Yeah, I agree with that. The other part about an actual closing procedure, you know, is part of what I was talking about with the relevance of the new system that we're bringing on, because you should be virtually automatically getting that. I mean, that should be and will be, I'm assuming, and maybe we could get some samples from some of these present users, that should already be there. I mean, that should be part of that manual, because I would assume that, other than, you know, with some small nuances, everybody who is using the system would be pretty much doing the same thing. And Vanessa made a comment to the fact that, you know, we are specifically, you know, water, sewer, drainage, solid waste related, in that we're doing pretty much the same thing for all 2,500 of those folks. So, you know, that should come. But in the interim, you know, the more time you, I think you can give yourself to get it right, the better off you're going to be. And maybe that's, maybe the fact that you jump out of one cycle and into another puts us into another tailspin. I don't know, but maybe there's a way to cut off a month at 25 days and start over on a new monthly billing calendar.
I want to ask a question. Paul, do you know, have you looked at our code? Does it require us to cut off the water read on the 25th? Is that a district code or policy we would have to change?
I'm not sure. I don't believe so, but I can look into that.
I mean, I'm in favor of simplifying our billing process. And, you know, there's also a crazy audit thing that has to happen every year for water that gets sold after June 25th, but gets accounted for in the following month. And it, I think John has a good idea, John Sullivan, and that we do have a end of the month cutoff and that we do bill without so much craziness that happens every time we have to do rereads and make sure we installed meters, which that we collected the right information each month when we had to change out meters. Definitely worth looking at.
Okay. Anything else here, or should we move on to item 8?
Nobody else has their hands raised.
Okay, let's go ahead to discuss the reserve policy.
So again, this is just another one of the things that we're going to be bringing in the future. Last summer, I had reached out to Mr. Shanahan and discussed our reserve policy and made several corrections to it. And because of the situation with accounting, we just kind of put that on the back burner. But now we need to bring this back again to have the conversation with the Finance Committee and ultimately the board to talk about the intent for some of these replacement accounts. One of the things that we have been doing that I've noticed quite a bit over the years is that the replacement accounts are being used for supplies, repairs, things like that. And the reserve policy doesn't specifically speak to the designation replacement versus repairs. And those are some of the things that we're going to be having the conversation with moving forward. I do have some questions for Mr. Shanahan that I need to respond to so we can get some of these specific items cleaned up. But ultimately, it's the board's designation for these replacement reserve accounts for water, sewer, and drainage to determine what the use of those funds specifically are. One of the things that we also need to talk about is the development impact fees. I think those need to be a little bit defined better and the use of the funds more restrictive based on the collection of those funds. We're specifically bound by a government code to designate these funds for specific usage. And the existing reserve policy does not specifically identify what those are to the level that it should. It does designate them, but we need to clean that language up a little bit and ensure that future generations know specifically what these funds are to be spent on and what they're not to be spent on. So really, this is just, again, putting this on the radar for the Finance Committee. This is some of the work that we're doing behind the scenes, just kind of clean this stuff up and get it cleaned up moving forward so that there are no questions later on down the road of what's being spent and where.
Just as a point of relevance, Paula, and I know you don't have an exact number for this. If you were to tell me how many different accounts there are that relate to reserves, and they could be development impact, or they could be sewer replacement, or they could be sewer repair. I don't know what they would be categorized. How many of those do we have?
Let me look. I actually have that somewhat handy for you. Out of the active accounts, so water and sewer each have, so they have eight in water cap in the water fund. Sewer has six, Drainage has 5. Security has 6, and administration has 2. And we do have 2 accounts for solid waste. Basically, it's an admin allocation fund and then an unreserved. So it's unreserved, unrestricted.
Right. That's just to pass through on our administrative overhead for running the contract, correct? But so are there sub accounts at the present time that are delineating the difference between a basic water account and anything we might have collected in terms of developer funds?
Yes, absolutely. So we have in the monthly board report, there is the reserve balances that are attached within the staff report. They're designated by improvement versus replacement. And then we have, for example, for water, we have the water capital replacement, which is restricted to capital. We have the water supply augmentation, which is development impact fees. And then the remainder are replacement and unreserved fund balance. We also do have admin allocation. These reserve accounts were set up to be a board designation for the property tax at the end of the fiscal year. So once the books have been closed and the remainder of the accounts have been closed out, if property taxes were available at the end of the fiscal year, we would use those admin allocation accounts. The board would designate it, whether it was capital improvement or capital replacement for specific funds.
Okay. All right. So the leftover unspent on security money would be then reallocated back into individual funds?
For property tax, yes.
Right. Okay. Marty, anything?
No, I remember seeing this policy once before and it never got anywhere, but eventually we need to get it taken care of. But I think getting this financial statements is the highest priority.
Yeah, I agree. The other part of that that's been bothering me and confusing me when we look at the research that we've done over the short term that Michael's done some of is we have front loaded a lot of potential reserve expense based on individual projects that got launched based on the fact that we got free money and the Ken Cooley allocation. And I'm still not comfortable with that versus, you know, long-term what we're collecting. And I'm still not really comfortable whether we do or we don't, both in the short term and maybe in somewhat in the medium term, have this thing figured out to when reserves become or reserve balances become a critical impact. So I don't know where we go with that, but you know, I haven't been able in my head to reconcile that.
I think one of the things to keep in mind is that right now, you know, the reserves go hand in hand with the financial reporting, and it might have a critical impact based on the activities that occurred within the last 2 fiscal years. So it's definitely one thing to keep in mind that once we see the reconciliations of the beginning and ending balances for fiscal year 21 and then moving into fiscal year 22, with the help of Vanessa's team, I think we're going to have a better picture of where we're at so we can move forward and make better decisions with the capital improvement plans and look towards a 5 to 10 year long range financial plan to ensure that our reserve contributions are being spent appropriately, with the reserve policy being updated as well, which would dictate what those specific funds are being used for with under which fund. It's hand in hand, and we really need to ensure that we're moving forward with the right beginning and ending balances so we can have that information for you.
Okay. I just still isn't making clear enough sense to me. And sometime at the end of November, we're going to be talking about property tax allocation money, and based on how this Measure R thing goes, how and where we do things with it. And I wanted to have a more clear understanding of, you know, okay, what's the impact on reserves if we start propping up security for one reason or another, depending on how this vote goes. Any other questions or comments on the item?
I do have a comment from John Sullivan. Go ahead, John.
2020, the auditor indicated to the district that money had been taken out of improperly for use of studies rather than water augmentation. Water augmentation is strictly a project. And so the auditor said, you got to put that money back into water augmentation. You got to take it out of operations or in some other fashion, fund that. And the same situation happens with these miscellaneous amounts that get pulled out from reserves that should be coming out of the operating budgets. So there is clearly defined what they're supposed to be for, at least on the developer side, as to the reserves for, you know, security and reserves for admin. I find those to be, in my mind, very laughable. We should not even have those. We, particularly with the way security is and admin's handled as a zero-based item, I just don't see the reason to have those. And you've got a lot of categories there that really there's impact fees and water augmentation, and then you've got reserve funding, and then you have this weird thing, which is the repayment of that loan for the water plant interfund. That should be it, not all this other stuff that gets loaded in there. Otherwise, it gets very confusing for everybody to understand. Thank you.
One of the things that I've mentioned in the past, and I don't know how you work your way through this, but I've always felt that interfund borrowing, you know, I'm not saying it wasn't a good idea, but the reporting of it has contributed to making things confusing when you try to understand your reserve position. And when we got down to what is now a manageable level, I kept asking why we don't pay it off. I mean, number one, it's funny money. And number two, the interest on it is funny money. And I don't know what we would have to do to consider that, but certainly by the point we were about to cut over to a new system, it would be wonderful to just start with absolutely clean reserves. Mm-hmm. I mean, we may wind up at some point in our life talking about, you know, bond repayments and the cost per ratepayer to cover those. But in the interim, it would make for a very clean slate if we could just pay off that $700,000 or whatever it is and clean up that account. But there's nothing we need to do with that at the moment. But it's just a comment that it's just something I've seen over the years that has frustrated me. So. Anything else on that item? If not, we'll move to Measure R.
There are no more comments on that item.
Okay. Tom, is this you?
Yeah, this is me. I'm just letting you know that I believe it was since the last Finance Committee meeting, we filed all the paperwork with the county, and the county has since, working with Amelia, who does an amazing job working with the county registrar of voters for a variety of reasons. It's on file, it will be on the ballot, and I'm starting to see different things going on out there in support or against Measure R. And Kelly and I and Paula are meeting with people as needed if they have any questions about, you know, what sort of outreach, what sort of educational information there is for Measure R. Amelia has a number of items put onto the web page. There's articles in the pipeline. It was actually the title of the pipeline. Just keeping the Finance Committee up to date on what's going on with Measure R. And then there was pretty good explanation about the do's and don'ts as district employees and district elected officials when it comes to Measure R. And so our obligation is to answer questions, provide information. Again, Measure R is designed to take away this annual appropriation of property taxes. And then in this case, significant cutbacks in services due to the rate increases going away for this year. It's important for people to understand. This is how the district asked me, the board asked me to say, how can we fix this revolving problem with security not being able to fund itself through Measure J? And so this is the most logical approach that we could take. And hopefully the residents of the district get what they want when they go to the ballot box and they vote for or against Measure R. And then once it either passes or fails, then we'll do what we need to do next. And so if it passes, we're going to go the route of what it was supposed to be or what it was approved for by the voters. If it fails, we have to take a look at if this low, whatever level of security we can provide living within the Measure J means as directed by the board. So any questions?
Not for me. Marty?
No.
Okay. Any comments or hands, Amelia?
No hands, no comments.
Okay. Director and staff comments and suggestions. Marty, anything?
Oh, I have nothing to add, thanks.
Yeah, I'm good too. Tom or anybody, Paula, anybody on the staff?
No, I'm good. Thank you so much.
I'm good.
Nice. Okay. All right, then we'll go to 11, which is adjournment, and everybody have a nice day. Stay cool.
Thank you.